it when I turn around, look in the mirror. And if you don't like it, you can leave it, cause it's my own and I'll keep owning it. If you don't like what I'm wearing, well, you're only bothered cause you're staring, and you'll never talk me into caring, cause it's my own and I'll keep owning it. I'ma do just what I want on the regular, and it's really not my fault if you're scared of.
Welcome, everybody. So should we find the money to keep the Brewers here? 844-967-2789. Where should the money come from? Who should take the bulk of responsibility in paying for it? And by the way, please don't call 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Don't call and say we should put the stadium tax back on. That's gone. It would need new legislation. For those of you who have gotten to know me, you know I'm an enormous Brewers fan. I have been a baseball fan my entire life. I knew how to keep score before I could write in cursive, basically. I love baseball. There's a whole bunch of reasons why. But for present purposes, I'm just going to say this. The Brewers have won 9 in a row. They swept the Padres. They're about to sweep the Cubs, knock on wood. The Padres' payroll is $238 million. And they stunk this year. They will not make the playoffs. The Cubs' payroll is $188 million. Let's just call it $190 for rounding purposes. You want to take a guess, Anya, what Brewers' payroll is? I love it because... I've got a feel that this may not be in your core wheelhouse.
Right. I love a good baseball game mostly because I love a good sausage race more than anything. So, what was the Padres again?
Padres is $238 million. Cubs $190 million.
Well, then I mean, with how good the Brewers are doing, I'm going to shoot between the two, $150 million, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Brewers payroll this year is $108 million.
Oh, whoa! Low, right, way lower than I thought.
So let's just call it 110. It's $80 million less than the Cubs. It's basically $130 million less than the Padres. That's pretty incredible. Should we find the money to keep the Brewers in Milwaukee? 844-967-2789. When they took the Braves to Atlanta, it took Bud Selig to figure out how to bring the Brewers back to Milwaukee. And one thing, it doesn't really matter what source you use for this. Sports fans in Wisconsin, sports fans especially in Milwaukee, are some of the greatest sports fans in the country. And I don't mean that we just show up and we spend a lot of money and we drink and we have fun. I mean, people actually know a lot about the sports. One of the reasons that I have been such a diehard Brewers fan for so long is, one, we are a very small market baseball club. The Cubs broadcast rights rake in hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, they broadcast throughout the Midwest. They will get airtime on the coasts. They are hugely popular. The same thing can be said for the St. Louis Cardinals, who are, in my opinion, more of our arch nemesis than the Cubs are. And the Cardinals, self-appointed ambassadors of baseball, they're whiny. And guess who's got basically the Brewers? I think we've got like 76 wins and 56 losses, 78 wins, 56 losses. We're way over 500. The St. Louis Cardinals have the inverse record for this year. And let's see. Anybody know this off the top of their head? This is like Bueller. What do you guess? I'll ask Anya since you're my guinea pig this afternoon.
I'm always Bueller.
Right? when you produce, yes. Mm-hmm. What do you think the payroll for the Cardinals is?
Good Lord, the Cardinals. Oh, man, like $10 and a bus ticket, I would hope. But I'll go with, oh, God, $200 million?
Yeah, you're really sort of on the right track. They're at about 183 million too. So the Cubs and the Cardinals, again, they've got huge broadcast rights. They've got fans that stretch from coast to coast. They dominate those middle states, right? Here we are, little old Milwaukee. And we have been competitive in our division. We've made playoff after playoff after playoff. We got loyal fans. This club produces a ton of money for the region. And I really don't think the question here should be, do we find the money? It's we need to go find the money. It's where and how and who's going to pay, you know, who's going to pay the bulk of this, right? Who to whom does that economic burden fall? That's really the question in my view. And it's the most important one. I don't think a reasonable argument can be made that the Brewers don't drive, aren't themselves a little microeconomy within southeastern Wisconsin and throughout the state. I think they're one of the most powerful brands that we've got in these parts. So I want to see that. 844-967-2789. I think we have to keep them. I think we got to go find that money. You know, I think it's a little bit disingenuous for people to start looking at the city in Milwaukee County who have barely been scraping by, who yes, have a sales tax now, but that sales tax is just a temporary fix. We're going to be back in structural deficit land within a decade, more near term for the city and in more dire straits. That's not a correction. It's a momentary solution. And oh, by the way, it's not like it's just Milwaukee County and the city that reap the benefits from the Brewers. It's the entire state. It stands up a huge part of our economy. And by the way, I also think we just love this stuff. I see some of the callers coming in. Hang on there. I'm going to get to you. I wanted to share just this little story. So I've been keeping score at Brewers games and baseball games for many, many, many years, basically since I was about 7 or 8 years old. When I moved to New York, the big fancy law firm, they took us to a Yankees game and we sat in the box. And so I did my usual routine. I went and I got myself a light beer, bought myself a scorecard and a pencil. It was like 10 bucks in Yankee Stadium. And I sat down in the luxury box with my hot dog and my beer and my scorecard and I started to keep score. And I always had this idea in my head of New York sports fans being like the most epic sports fans ever. Not true, apparently, because almost everyone in that luxury box came up to me and they're like, what are you doing? I've never seen such a thing. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm keeping score for the baseball game.
Why are you taking notes about these boys running? We just like watching them run out here in New York.
I don't think there was any interest in the actual game at all. And I was like, I'm not here to network, you know, because I was naive and from Wisconsin. And when we go to games, we actually mean to watch them. So I sat there keeping score, had a crowd around me watching me keep score. I got to start to explain to them all the little nerdy arguments we get into when something is complex from a scoring perspective. I love that stuff. But boy, the Brewers are crushing it. I thought I saw somebody on the horn here. Anya, who do we have? And welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show.
We've got a couple options here for you. We've got Randy, Dick, and Chris. Pick yours.
Ooh, let's start with Randy. I'm feeling Randy this afternoon. What do you have to say about the Brewers? Should we find the money and keep them? And where do you think the money should come from?
Hi, Don. Thanks for taking my call. Preface this with, first of all, I grew up on National Avenue and lived at those stadiums. You know, practically as a kid, even though I live in Stoughton, now I'm a Milwaukee native. I feel that the owner, Mr. Anastasio, should come up with a show of good faith and contribute towards it, in that, you know, the Southeast Wisconsin stadium district has been very kind to him. It's given him a sweetheart deal in terms of rental. I feel he should come up with something, in that the value of the team has doubled since he purchased it. But on the other end, I don't expect him to come up with all the money. I can't even give you a real percentage. That's a matter of opinion. But I also think the state should kick in as well, as per Governor Evers had proposed initially, but was gunned down by a certain political party. So that's my take on it.
Do you think they? I thanks so much, Randy. And I'm sure we're going to talk about those with some other callers. One of the problems when you talk about major league sports franchises is that there's a finite supply, right? And so owners get to almost extract economic benefits from the communities that they move into. I agree with you. We would like to see what I would call some earnest money from Mr. Anastasio to keep it here. Let's say that doesn't show up. Do we still foot the bill, Randy?
I say yes. But I think the appetite for this would be a lot better if you were to come up and show, make a show of good faith and put down earnest money, as you say.
I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. And maybe some of those political contours and having the now billionaire owner who has doubled his investment more or less needs to make that showing. Dick from Madison, what do you have to say? Should we do everything in our power to keep the Brewers here to find that money somewhere? What say you, friend?
Absolutely. You know, here's the thing. I got kids who live in Kansas City, and you're the I'm having a senior moment. Who was the manager that went out there and won the World Series about 5-6 years ago from the Blue
in Rangers? Kansas City? I'm not going to remember that guy's name either. But I was like, wait a minute, the Royals, the Royals are winning the World Series. Another small market team.
And I said to Carson, I said, look at this. I said, here's the thing: the Milwaukee Brewers fed you a guy that won a World Series. He was a little bit odd, and people here, the same thing right now. We've got a manager that gets the optimum out of players.
Yes.
It's just incredible. And the other thing is, why do we have to keep being the farm club for the rest of the league, or the rest of Major League Baseball? We produce tremendous people. They have a tremendous farm system, and they get away from us. And yet, the governor's idea is where I'm at. And that giant sucking sound you'll hear is the economy collapsing if they were to leave. I mean, think of all the small business people, restaurant people, bar,
It's an entire economy. It's an entire economy. Listen, thanks so much for the call, Dick. I couldn't agree with you more. We got texters weighing in. We got folks on the lines. I don't have enough time. We are going to get to you when we come back from break, because this is a big question for all of us. And shame on us if we make this partisan, right? Let's figure this out together. If you disagree, especially, I want to know that. If you think we should let them go, let's talk about that. 844-967-2789. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show on Civic Media. Thing. This is the Maggie Dawn.
The table about to turn. Yeah. I've been flipping through my timeline.
Welcome back, everybody. As soon as I got off the line with Randy from Stoughton, guess what popped into my head? A toast for Yost. Good old Ned Yost, and then all of our excellent listeners. We got a bunch of texts that came in. Thank you, Terry. Thank you, texters, telling me it was Ned Yost. I have a T-shirt that says Toast for Yost, and here on what I could have impressed you all with my Brewers Arcana, my recollection of some fun facts. I blew it live on the radio. But yes, a toast for Yost. Ned Yost went to the Kansas City Royals and led them to a World Series. And the point that Randy made about what managers in Milwaukee over the last 15 years or so have been able to do is really true. And that is extract maximum value from a roster. And yes, we are effectively a farm team for the rest of the MLB, for the big market teams in the MLB, because what do? They come and they basically buy our best players off of us. And so when you see the Brewers achieving success, they're doing that in a way that to me is so Milwaukee. It is so on brand. It is so the state of Wisconsin. It's one of the reasons that I want them to stay. They speak to who we are as a state. And that is, boy, we're going to work hard. We're going to care about one another. And when we do that and we stay positive and we're worried about tomorrow and not arguing about yesterday or blaming a whole bunch of people, when we come together and we keep it positive, great things happen. And when you look back in the last 15, 20 years for the Milwaukee Brewers, when they do that and when they do that best, it's with the great managers that let players play and have some fun out there. Wow, do you see a difference on that baseball field? I think that's true in life too, right? When you really can come together with some shared values and positivity, that's when great transcendent things happen. We're getting some text messages and folks giving feedback. Why is it that we don't demand more of owners? Why is it unreasonable to ask them to chip in a fair amount? It's not unreasonable. Don't get me wrong. I think they should. But the reality is that we do not have leverage. And what I mean by that is, if you want a Major League Baseball team, there's only X number of them. And so if there's only X number of them, and then you reduce that number by a ton because they're not available to move, they're under contract, they're in long-term leases with their stadiums, you get down to only having available a couple of teams. And so the choice is not, are we going to be able to get a fair deal that pleases everyone, or an unfair deal? The choice is usually some kind of a little bit distasteful deal or no team. That's what happens in professional athletics. And that is the problem. Listen, when you talk to economists that study professional sports, they're like, this is one of the most convoluted, perverted economic systems that you will see. So please don't get me wrong. I think it is an abomination that owners are able to get away with what they are, especially when there are players in leagues like the NFL who have such a short career and leave those fields depleted and oftentimes neurologically compromised. Not the same level of risk in baseball, but yeah, these guys are leaving depleted. Eric from Lodi, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. Should we keep them? Should we find that money?
I think within reason. I don't think we should just give them a blank check and do anything that they want, because quite frankly, this is public money for private profit, you know, and that really kind of bugs me.
Do you really think it is? Let me press on that just a little bit, Eric. Let me ask you this. Is it really public money for private profit? That is certainly one of the things that occurs. But isn't the other thing, isn't really the discussion, the debate that we're having, is that let's say we invest $50 million of public money, that the equation is actually, what is the return in terms of economic benefit for that investment? Well, what is the ROI? What's returning to the public in terms of jobs and economic activity?
Well, I mean, you're counsel to the council for Milwaukee, so you probably have a better idea of this than I. But when they built, you know, Miller Park way back when, it was sort of the same kind of blackmail thing. Well, we got to build the stadium where they're going to leave. Yep. Have we recouped the investment on that?
Yeah, and the economic analyses on that, Eric, are pretty overwhelmingly clear that we have returned to southeastern Wisconsin and the broader Wisconsin economy approximately like triple to quadruple what the public investment was to build what was then called Miller Park. Does that change your thinking about it?
Only slightly. I mean, I think I'm just tired of having blackmail every 25 years. You know, somebody's going to say, well, you've got to spend this much money or we're going to go. You know, I think maybe there needs to be something that locks them in, you know, a little bit more permanently.
I hear you. And Eric, you may call yourself not an expert on these things, but I'm going to call you pretty expert, because when you talk to the folks that are at those negotiating tables, and I was but a child when the Miller Park deal happened, when you talk to folks at those negotiating tables, oftentimes it's the length of the arrangement that is the one piece, the one bargaining chip that ends up getting leveraged to try to ensure that maximum value returns to us taxpayers that help pay for these facilities and allow these under market lease prices. This has been one of those things that for me is really personal, because I feel such an emotional attachment to the Brewers. And I think a lot of people feel that way. And yet what we should be looking at are the, in my opinion, is to get past that emotional connection and really look at the economics. Does the deal make sense? Can we expect a return on an investment that exceeds our taxpayer investment in the Brewers and that franchise? I absolutely think we should be pressing owner Anastasio to put some of his own dollars on the table. When we come back, we're going to move on because I want to talk about the crazy stuff that Mark Meadows said on the stand yesterday. What the heck was that? Most of it doesn't even pass the smell test. But if you are on the line and you want to continue to talk about this, I will let you do so. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked and join us. 844-967-2789. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Maggie Dawn, as always and ever, with Anya in the booth here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join our conversation this afternoon. 844-967-2789. We've been chatting about the Brewers. Do we keep him? Lots of texters. Let's see here. From Madison, WMDX, we don't even have a choice. We have to keep the team. We are far more invested in the team than the team is in us. No kidding, right? Having major sports franchises anytime this is measured is a huge big deal when you're trying to recruit people to come and work at businesses. And it doesn't matter if you're talking about folks with technical skills on a manufacturing floor or professionals. It matters to everybody. It would be a huge problem if we do not have a Major League Baseball franchise in the state of Wisconsin. And certainly here would be where you would have it, right? And so it's a really big deal. Jim from Appleton listening on WGBW. I haven't been to a Brewers game in decades. However, I'd be happy to pay a quarter a month to keep the stadium district going. That's a, you know, if we spread it out, it could be that little, right? And he points out that we should see the rental agreement increasing the per month lease rate to the Brewers from 90 to say 125 or more $1,000. Couldn't agree with you more, Jim from Appleton. Thanks, everybody. If you're on the lines, we're going to get there, but I do want to set up the next topic of the afternoon because Mark Meadows did something that literally caused gasps in the courtroom yesterday. So what was going on yesterday in Georgia? We all know that Fannie Willis has charged Trump and 18 other people with a variety of crimes under Georgia state law. But Mark Meadows was in federal court yesterday. What in the heck was he doing in federal court if he's been charged in Georgia under state law? Well, there's this little thing called the Supremacy Clause in our Constitution. And when it comes to certain arguments that a person would make if they're employed by the federal government to avoid criminal liability, one of those arguments deals with immunities. And the argument is basically if the actions that you're undertaking are part and parcel of your job as a federal official, then you can't be held criminally responsible for those same acts. And so the issue that can only be decided by a federal court is, does Mark Meadows have, and it's a pretty low threshold for removal, it's basically like, can you make a colorable argument that he would have this kind of immunity? So it came to him and his lawyers to decide, well, how do we make that low threshold showing that what he was doing and these acts that are alleged in the criminal complaint, that they were within the scope of his job as Donald Trump's chief of staff. That was their job yesterday. Now, more or less, the rule in criminal defense work is you don't put your client on the stand unless they're absolutely bulletproof or you have no other option. Because your client gets cross-examined and your client can be forced to answer a whole lot of questions that they really don't want to answer. And in the case of this kind of criminal allegation, this RICO violation, right, this racketeering count, effectively a conspiracy count, Fannie Willis has got a lot of documentary evidence, and she's got a lot of other witnesses that were in the rooms when certain things were being talked about. So it's pretty unwise to put a criminal defendant on the stand subject to cross-examination, locking in their testimony, locking in their explanation for what they did, when, because it is a pretrial hearing, that criminal defendant and his lawyers haven't even seen all of the evidence that the prosecution has. So literally, when in federal court yesterday, this was the hearing where the prosecution and the defense were arguing about whether or not the Georgia criminal case should be removed to federal court. Literally, people gasped when the first thing Meadows attorney George Terwilliger did was call Mark Meadows to the stand. Holy cow. I'm going to make an argument that it's just totally stupid that Mark Meadows did this. It is basically going all in really early, and you haven't seen the evidence. And the interesting thing about the argument here is that it ends up being almost tautological. And by tautological, I mean it's circular reasoning. And this became very clear in the hearing yesterday. And that is that basically Mark Meadows said, my job is anything that involves Donald Trump. And if I'm doing it on behalf of Donald Trump, whether it's political or not political, because I'm his chief of staff, my duties include anything that helps him out. And therefore, I'm owed immunity from criminal prosecution. Okay, I'll go through some of the things that he said and the arguments that were made. But if you're looking at your radio going, what? Yes, you should be. It's that silly. And oh, did I mention the fact that after Nixon, the federal government passed this thing called the Hatch Act, which basically makes campaigning on federal government time, engaging in political activity on federal government time, a crime. And I want to know from all of you, should there be a ban on political activity by federal officials? In other words, for example, I work for Milwaukee County, right? I cannot, at 10 a.m. when I'm sitting at my county desk, pick up the phone and start soliciting political donations as Milwaukee County's Corporation Counsel. That is clearly not what I should be doing. That's the same question here. It's like, can the chief of staff of a sitting president call up and offer campaign money to, you know, speed along the vote counting? That has nothing to do with the functioning of the federal government on that day. That's about some future state. And again, that activity is prohibited by the Hatch Act. So here's my question to you all, because I'm going to, buried beneath what is this sort of technical sounding, boring, ridiculous argument that we all think should fail, lurking underneath that is what this is really about. Because if Mark Meadows can get his case removed, and he makes this argument that he's immune because anything a chief of staff does is in service of the principal here, the then president of the United States. And even if it's political, and even if it's campaigning, and oh, by the way, even if it's criminal, I can't be prosecuted for that because I was acting at the behest of an elected official. Then my argument to you is that there is simply no act that a president can ever engage in that he shouldn't. What do I mean by this? The whole point here is if Mark Meadows is immune, even if he has committed crimes, then so too is Donald Trump, and there is absolutely no bounds to what a president can engage in. Because a president can always make an argument that anything that keeps me in power serves the federal interest and serves this country best, because I think I am the one true and only leader that will serve the United States best for all time. I'm the only one. And if that is the standard, by the way, Nixon made this argument, if that is the standard, then that man or woman that is president is above the law. And therefore, by extension, Mark Meadows' tautological circular reason that he can therefore do anything in service of the president because they're all above the law is where we end up. So I want to hear from conservatives especially. You will go to the front of the line today, 844-967-2789. I want you to completely forget about whether or not we should be criminally prosecuting Donald Trump. And all I want you to answer is this question. What conduct by a sitting president should never be allowed? Not that it necessarily triggers criminal prosecution. Forget that. Is there any conduct that a president can engage in that should be disallowed? Disallowed by us as voters. Yesterday, I made a call to us to use our voices as the arm of justice. I'm asking for that here, too. Forget about the criminal prosecutions. Was this conduct so beyond the pale? And if not this, then what? It places presidents and those that do their bidding above the law. And the last time I checked, that wasn't supposed to be how it works. So let's just concede for argument's sake that the criminal prosecution shouldn't be happening. But what conduct is the limit for a president? Is it murder? Can a president sell drugs to fund his campaign because he believes that he should be the supreme leader of the United States in perpetuity? Can he traffic in human beings? Can he bribe people? Can he extort people? Oh, wait, that's what happened in Ukraine. What is the conduct that should not ever be permissible, whether it's Joe Biden or Donald Trump? Forget about the criminal prosecutions right now. And, oh yes, the Constitution actually tried to provide us an answer. It's in Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Disqualifying folks from federal office if they engage in an insurrection, if they attempt to overthrow the government. That was the conduct that within the Constitution they felt should be very clear, that that would put a person outside of the bounds of acceptable behavior. But the arguments that Mark Meadows and Donald Trump are making is that there is no conduct. There is no rule, there is no limit that constrains the actions of either the president or, in Mark Meadows' instance, the chief of staff. How can that be? This, to me, is at the crux of the question. The talking heads can add no weaponization of the DOJ and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And do we have a precedent that potentially an activist, conservative district attorney could attempt to trump up charges against someone that works for Joe Biden or Joe Biden himself and try to drag that person into court? So my point is, can these systems be perverted? Yes, they can. I don't think they are here, but they can be because they're filled with human beings. My question is to us as a voting public, what's the limit? Is it murdering someone on Fifth Avenue? Because, yeah, the president said he could do that and still get elected. Is it extorting a foreign power who's an ally? Yeah, because this president did that. Is it pressuring a secretary of state to nullify votes and magically find other votes so that you win Because, yeah, this guy did that. What is the conduct? Here is what Alan Dershowitz, one of Trump's lawyers, said when he was defending Trump in his first impeachment trial. Every public official that I know believes that his election is in the public interest. And mostly, you're right, your election is in the public interest. And if a president does something which he believes will help him get elected in the public interest, that cannot be the kind of quid pro quo that results in impeachment. Wow. A president could say this: I want to be elected. I think I'm a great president. I think I'm the greatest president there ever was. And if I'm not elected, the national interest will suffer greatly. That cannot be an impeachable offense. Well, what is? You are a conservative. Call me and tell me where the limit. What actions by a president should never be permitted? 844-967-2789. I'm Maggie Dawn, and you're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. Conservative listening, I dare you to call me. 844-967-2789. I dare you to call me and define for me what actions a president should never be permitted to take. Tell me, what is it? Forget the question of whether or not he should be criminally prosecuted if he engages in those activities. But isn't there some stuff that a president and his chief of staff should not be able to do? Mark Meadows testified, quote, he helped question the 2020 presidential election results out of a federal interest in free and fair elections, and I intended to build national trust in the outcome and bring around a peaceful transfer of power. Really? Huh? Then why did you send an email to Trump campaign Jason Miller that said, we just need to have someone coordinating the electors for states? What does that have to do with the electoral process, free and fair? Because he's talking about the fake electors, which was clear from the context of the emails. The judge asked him, can you point to the sections in Article 2, which is the portion of our Constitution that defines presidential powers? What is the role under Article 2 of the Constitution for the president in a state election or any federal election? Mark Meadows couldn't answer it. I don't know enough to opine. My job was to keep Trump well-informed and well-advised on a variety of issues. Wait. But you're just arguing that you calling these people and being on the call with Brad Raffensperger and find the 11,000 votes and texting with some of the investigators from Georgia, that was about building national trust and to ensure a peaceful transfer of power. The fake electors were about handing the keys over pleasantly to the Biden administration? That's what he testified to. He was further testified, he was trying to resolve, quote, open questions that continue to be a roadblock for initiating other plans. I just needed to land the plane. So let me get this straight. You promised campaign funds to Georgia if they could count the votes more quickly. You were on the phone and helped organize the meetings where Donald Trump asked the Secretary of State to find other votes. But this was basically to just get Trump refocused on what exactly? He was asked if he debates or disputes Attorney General Barr's statements that there was no fraud at any level that would impact the outcomes. And he basically said, I didn't disagree with that. Well, then why did you do what you did? It's just, I cannot make heads or tails of it. He is federal operations, Meadows' lawyer, George Terwilliger, told Judge Jones during closing arguments at the day-long hearing, calling Meadows Trump's alter ego, and at one point arguing that the chief of staff's official duties were even broader than Trump's. What? So anything a chief of staff does, he's immune from criminal prosecution, apparently, because he did it? Do you understand the problem here? It is placing people above the law. That isn't what we do in this country. Specifically with reference to the Raffensperger call, Meadows argued that this was an effort to reach a, quote, compromise over the ongoing litigation the Trump campaign had filed. Meadows claimed he was merely wanting to find a resolution in order to, quote, get things off the president's plate so they could focus on the, quote, peaceful transfer of power. Like, cue the laugh track. Are you kidding me? It doesn't even smell test. If this was all about election integrity, why in all of these meetings were there no White House lawyers there? Was there no one there from the Department of Justice? Why was Attorney General Barr not there? Or acting attorney Jeff Rosen? Why were they not in these discussions? Why were they not being asked to advise the president? Why was it you, Mark Meadows, and all the crackpots, the Kraken lady? And no one actually from the federal government? If this was about the operations of the federal government, where were they? No, it was political activity, again, made illegal under the Hatch Act post-Nixon. And shall any of us ever forget, because the past predicts the future, this is what Nixon argued. In 1977, Richard Nixon sat down with interviewer David Frost, and David Frost asked him this. You're saying is that there are certain situations where the president can decide that something is in the best interest of the nation and go ahead and do something illegal. Nixon responded, well, when the president does it, that means it's not illegal. That's Donald Trump's defense. That's Mark Meadows' defense. I declassified it in my brain, in my head, magically. I can ask Ukraine and say, we're not going to send aid unless you dig up dirt on my political rival. Why? Because I'm the president. And I say it's fine. L.A. Tom, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What say you this afternoon?
Hey, Maggie, first off, we people ultimately are the government, so we must never forget that. Second, you know, they talk about two topics. So the one is, why can't we make the Brewers just like we did with the Packers, where the team is owned by the city or the state? That'd be my one question. And then my second would be, apparently you didn't work in the Scott Walker administration, where they were working on the state's dime
on county time
campaigning for him as well. Yep. So Republicans are known for it. If they're spewing it, they're doing it. Just remember that. But
I love it, Tom.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Tom. I'm going to have to use that one. If they're spewing it, they're doing it. It's all projection. It's gaslighting of America. No, I did not work for Scott Walker. I wouldn't have taken that job. And yes, that was the John Doe investigation when Scott Walker put a different private email internet server in the county executive suite. So what? So all of his staffer could work on getting him reelected and eventually elected to the governor's mansion. But, you know, nobody went to prison then either, did they? Mark from the SAC, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. Oh, one quick thing. Very briefly, Tom, you asked, why don't the Brewers have effectively a co-op ownership like the Packers do? One is, we'd actually have to buy it from Anastasio. So figure out how we do that. Very difficult now. I'm not sure if we're coming up with a couple of bills, if you know what I'm saying. I will look more into that because now you have my interest peaked. Mark, you're going to get the last word here, my friend.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea. I don't know if the law would allow us to do that for the Brewers. And for Tom's thing, that's been a burn to my blanket for Scott Walker for you know, since before he
Forever.
Got elected. That should have sent his ass to jail along with his entire county staff, it sounds like, because it was a clear violation of the Hatch Act, that they were doing political work, and Scott Walker said, well, I didn't know it was there. Well, I mean, here we got another, you know, the conservatives think they can get away with anything because some of them believe they're anointed by God, so whatever they do is God's will, so they can get away with it. And I say BS to that, because what Dante, I think, it's either the eighth or ninth circle of hell that those people are assigned to when they're for their oath breaking and promise breaking to.
You heard it here. The eighth and ninth circle of hell per Dante and Mark from the SAC. Thank you so much for calling. Here's it. It didn't work at Nuremberg, did it? I was just following orders. It won't work here. It won't work here. I'll be back tomorrow. Tune back in. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. This